God is good all the time. Well, as Sharon said, we've been going through a series called Go for the Gold, and it has to do with the fact that just a few weeks from now, in August, we have the Summer Olympics in London, and we've looked at how to use our time for the Lord's work. We've looked at how to use our shape, who God has made us to be, in service for the Lord. And today we want to look at the third part of this trilogy, how to use our finances. So I thought I'd use a true-false test. I've used this before in times past. And so there are seven questions. You have in your bulletin, there's a place where you can write stuff. And you might want to write these seven aspects down of good financial work in our lives. So, true-false, and just in your own minds, keep score here. True-false number one, I use a monthly budget to anticipate and track income and expenses. True or false for you? Number two, I have balanced my checkbook for the past 3 months. True or false? Some of you, you remember what a checkbook is or what it looks like, okay? And hopefully you're not of the kind, how can I be out of money if I still have checks? Nobody here believes that. No, that's not true, Steve. Don't do there. All right, number three, true or false, I pay less than $100 a year in credit card interest. Less than $100 a year in credit card interest, yes or no, true or false. Number four, I don't carry credit card debt for more than 2 months, if at all. I do not carry credit card debt for more than 2 months. Number five, my assets exceed my current level of indebtedness. And that includes the house. All right? So you have a level of indebtedness, but hopefully the house and everything else is worth something. That's number five. Number six, I invest regularly in some kind of retirement plan. I invest regularly in some kind of retirement plan. True or false? And number seven, I have an emergency savings fund that equals or exceeds 2 months of basic expenses. I have an emergency savings plan equals or exceeds 2 months of basic expenses. All right, now, basic expenses is food and housing, utilities, this sort of thing. Not going to movies or 31 flavors every night, okay? All right, so here we go. You add them all up. How well did you do? Did anyone get all seven? A bunch of you did. You come on up and join me. You can help me with this message. Okay? Good for you. Outstanding. If you answered 4 to 6 questions true, well, then there's some work for you to do in the area of financial planning and financial management. And if you answered 3 or less, I can see why you took money out of the offering plate when it went by, rather than putting in money to the offering plate. Now, the theme statement here for all three of these weeks on going for the gold is from 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. The Apostle Paul gives us one of his theme statements for his life. And what he says is this: do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. We're here to run the race, but even more, we're here to win the race. Or why run at all? That was Paul's approach to life. And I'd submit that he's giving us an example that every one of us needs to follow. So what does it mean to go for the gold? With respect, we've had time and talent, now treasure. What does it mean to go for the gold with respect to a focused use of personal financial resources for God's purposes, because God is a part of this equation? How can we leverage the use of our assets for maximum return on our investments in a spiritual sense? Now, warning, some of you may already feel uncomfortable. You may be saying, or the thought has crossed your mind and your hearts, oh, the preacher is getting to meddling. You know, we can talk about Jesus, and we can talk about the Bible. We can talk about a lot of things, but oh, when you get to talking about money, some people's heart rate goes up a bit. Some people get a little nervous or a little indignant. How dare the man want to talk about money in the church? I mean, my goodness gracious, isn't that all what the church wants anyway out of me is just my money? Any of those thoughts flying around? Those are common with a lot of people. And I'll tell you why that we have these problems. It's because we are facing one of the greatest threats to our spiritual life when we talk about money. Jesus said, you cannot serve two masters. And the two masters he talks about are God and mammon. Now, mammon was an Aramaic word for riches, wealth, assets, the money you have in your checking account, the place you live in, the car you drive, the clothes you wear, all of your assets. That's what would be summed up in the word mammon. And Jesus says you can't serve two gods. You have to choose. Jesus elevates mammon to the level and the competition of God himself. That's why we get a little antsy when we start talking about money. Because, unfortunately, money wants to have our allegiance and the same level of allegiance that we give to God. It wants to be the source of our security, not God. It wants to be the source of a good self-image, not God. It wants to be the one that drives our decision-making in a lot of areas of life, not God. But you can't serve both. You can't come in here and say, well, I serve God, but, oh, money is pretty cool too. God has to be God. And if God is God in our lives, then mammon will take its rightful place in our lives. So everything else I'm going to say today is predicated on that. Let God be God. And put money in its rightful spot. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. We start with the basic truth of our existence. It's found in Psalm 24, verse 1. Let's read this out loud together. The earth is the Lord's, and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. The psalmist is making a basic statement about life. The earth, everything that is included in the earth, is the Lord's. And the people are the Lord's. God owns everything. That's what he's saying. God owns everything we see. He even, in a sense, owns us. I mean, did you create yourself? Did you think yourself up one day? Life itself is a gift from God. God could have chosen not to have thought you up. But in fact, God did think about thinking you up and creating you. You're here today because God thought about you and said, I want you to be on this planet. That's why you're on this earth. God thought you up, and God gave you life. Your life is not yours to own. It's a gift of God. And so the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. Now that forms the basis of everything else I'm going to say today. In a sense, I can sum it up this way. We are the stewards of God's stuff. We're the stewards, not the owners. The stewards of God's stuff. Jesus had told a lot of parables about this. A lot of those wonderful little stories that he presented to the crowds as he did his 3 years of earthly ministry. I want us to look at one today. It's found in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 25, starting with verse 14. You may have heard it before. Matthew 25, verses 14 to 30. And I would invite you to look it up. I'll be reading from the New International Version. It's called the parable of the talents. Now, when I use the word talent here, I'm not talking about talents like I did last week, talents in terms of abilities and skills. A talent back then, as it's mentioned in the scriptures, is a weight of money. All right, so we're talking about money when we use this concept of talents in this parable. And Jesus is in the midst of a teaching section concerning the end time. He's talking about what it's going to be like in the end time. He's talking about how we get ourselves ready for the end time. The end time for us might be Jesus actually coming back to earth. The end time for us on this planet is going to be when we die. One of those two things is going to happen to us, for sure. So, Jesus begins this parable talking again about what it is going to be like in the kingdom of heaven. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, look, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." And some scholars speculate there the master's happiness was a banquet. It says, come on to the party. All right. Verse 22, the man with the 2 talents also came. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. "Master," he said, "I knew you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown, gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid. I went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew I had harvest where I had not sown and gather where I had not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Now, there's a bunch of different things going on in this parable. We have time to look at only a few of the more foundational points. Jesus, when he talked about the end time and then what was going to be like when the kingdom of heaven showed up, he often talked about a master who went away. A master who had something, he owned something. Like talents in this case, a one who owned a vineyard and another. He would go away and then he would come back. And when he came back, there would always be a settling of accounts. Everybody understood these sorts of things. Masters with great wealth, they had servants. And if he had to go on a business trip or a vacation, he would go and he would entrust his belongings to someone else. Those people were to be good stewards of what had been entrusted to them. And so that's the first point. Here we have an owner entrusting certain amounts of his riches to 3 servants, each according to his ability. The owner leaves on a long journey. The three servants are free to use the resources until the master returns. It's up to them to use their creativity and hard work to make something of this investment. And then when the master returns, each servant is judged on his use of the master's money. There are 2 takeaways that I want to talk about here. And the first one just speaks back to the passage in Psalm 24. It's the master's money we're talking about here. It's not their money. It's the master's money that has been entrusted to his servants. And they are to be good stewards of the master's money. They are to use the money for the benefit of the master. And the second takeaway is that servants are judged on how well they used it. Now, what's really interesting to me in this parable are the first two servants and the master's reply to them. Because one is given 5 talents, the other is given 2, each according to his ability. The master knew his servants. He said, well, this one I can give some more money to. He's really good with money. I'm going to give him the maximum amount. I'm going to give him the 5. And then I got another one. He's pretty good too, but not quite as good. I'm going to give him 2. And then this guy, well, okay, he can do something. I know he can, and so I'm going to give him 1. Then they all go out and do something with the money. And when the master comes back, do you notice those, the exchanges of the first two with the master, the first two servants? First of all, you sense an excitement on their part. Master, you gave me this amount of money. Look, I doubled it. Look, here it is for you. There's a great attitude on their part of wanting to serve, wanting to do their best, wanting to give back to the master as much as they could, and they double their amounts. But think about it just from the standpoint of how much that was, 5 to 10, 2 to 4. Well, those are certainly differing amounts, aren't they? Even to double them, when you look at the bottom line, you get 10, and then not as many as 10. But notice, did you notice how the master responds to both servants? He gives them the exact same level of praise. The exact same verbiage is given to them. One made more money. But they're both given the same level of praise. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a little amount. I'm going to give you more responsibility. Little sidebar there, by the way. To get blessed by the master is not, oh, I'm going to send you on a Bermuda vacation. No, I'm going to give you more responsibility. And then secondly, let's go party. Let's go to the banquet. Let's share in the master's happiness. Have you ever tried to judge yourself by somebody else? Here's the sidebar there. Oh, that person, they got a lot more ability. They have a lot more money in this case than I do. So what I do with money, you know, I'm not like so-and-so who's got so much more. That person's going to please God more with what they do than what I can do. Well, that's not true. It's what you do with what you've been given that counts. God knows how much you've been given. Each according to his ability. Each according to his level of expertise. And you'll get the same praise from God as one who does more because they have more, or does less because they have less. It's the same. But then we come to that third servant, who didn't see anything good about his master. He looked at his master as a man who seemed to rip people off, seemed to just be negative in all aspects. And he said, okay, here it is. I didn't do squat with it, but I didn't lose it either. So, you know, I dug a hole and I buried it. So here's your money back. Master wasn't real pleased with that. Now, what's remarkable about Jesus' teachings like this, there are a lot of them. Jesus talked more about our use of resources, of money, than he did about love, and he did about prayer. He taught a lot about our use of financial resources because he knew it was such an important issue for us. This is where we wrestle so much. This is where we struggle. This is where we need God's word more than anything else. And I tell you, it's pretty evident that we do struggle because we've been given God's resources. What do we tend to do with it? Well, I tell you what this country's doing with the resources. We squander it. We squander the resources we've been given. How do I know that? Well, look at consumer debt these days. What's going on with consumer debt? Now, the dictionary defines debt as money or property which one person is obligated to pay to another. Debt includes money owed to credit card companies, bank loans, money borrowed from relatives, home mortgage, past due medical bills. Bills that come due every month are not considered debt if they're paid off on time. But sadly, we squander God's resources because we're good at accumulating debt. Let me give you the figures I tracked down online. In 1974, consumer debt, and this excludes home mortgages. Consumer debt in the United States in 1974 was $202 billion. In 1984, it had risen to $527 billion. 1994, $1.021 trillion. In 2004, $2.141 trillion. And in 2010, $11.4 trillion. Consumer debt. Mostly credit card, but it could be a lot of different other ways. Now, this is consumer debt I'm talking about, not home mortgages. And how much money is going out of our pocketbooks because we have consumer debt to interest payments? You want to throw money away? Have a lot of debt. If you have a lot of debt, you're paying a lot of interest. If you're paying a lot of interest, you're throwing money away. It's as simple as that. It's a waste of money to have to use it to pay off interest. It's money just trashed in a black hole because we didn't have the discipline to save up for purchases we purchased with credit. And credit is killing us. I want to get a little practical here for a minute and talk about how to become debt-free, because debt is so pervasive in our land. It's plaguing our country. And so I came up with some key steps from the book Your Money Counts by Howard Dayton. And guess what his first statement is? We need to pray for God's help and guidance. We didn't pray enough, and we didn't get guided enough on the front end of this because we wound up with a lot of debt. But we need to be reminded that everything begins with the grace of God. Our salvation begins with the grace of God. Our existence begins with the grace of God. Well, so does handling of debt. It begins with the grace of God. Remember, it's God's money to begin with. He's the one who has given us every good gift. And so we need to go to Him to ask for His advice and then His graceful power to carry out His advice when it comes to debt. Okay, we pray. God, help us. Now, here's the concrete step. Here's the first one. Establish a written budget. I talk to a lot of people about budgets. I hear a lot of excuses why people don't have budgets. I've heard the excuse, we don't have enough money to budget. I mean, we're barely making it by now. We're just paying expenses. We don't have enough resource to budget for anything. I've heard that. And then I've heard from people just the opposite. Well, we're doing great. We always have enough money to pay off our bills. And so, you know, we've all got something left at the end of the month, or we come out even. We don't need to budget because we're, you know, we just kind of see it as it goes along and it's all good. So people say, I don't have enough money, therefore I can't budget. Or I've got enough money, I don't need to budget. They're both wrong. If you don't budget, you're not controlling that resource. If you don't budget the money ahead of time at the beginning of the month, you have not made a financial plan, a thought through, prayed through, hopefully realistic assessment of how you're going to use God's resource of money for that month. And it'll be like time. If we don't go into our day having thought through how we're going to use our day, the time that has been allotted us for this day, if we don't go into our day having thought through something about how I'm going to use the day, you come out at the end of the day and what do you say? Wow, I just don't know where the time went. And we do the same with money. At the end of the month, we go, I just don't know where the money went. That is not being the kind of steward of God's resources that He calls us to be. At the beginning of the month, we plan ahead. We analyze our spending patterns. We see where the money is to go. One of the things this does is it puts a bridle on impulse spending. Anybody guilty of impulse spending? Yeah, the rest of you put up your hands. Come on. Really. And, you know, the people who do the marketing, I mean, they put stuff right there at the checkout counter, don't they? Why are all those magazines, you know, they're right there at Safeway, and all those little trinkets, and you go into other kinds of stores, a Walmart or something else, a Target, and they've got all this stuff right there at the very end. You've gone through the labyrinth, you know. You've kept your eyes straight ahead. You have not been taken aside, you know. Oh, that would be fun to have, or oh, I think I really need that. And you make it to the end. The finish line is in sight, and oh no. You stumble at the very end because there's that magazine or there's that trinket or bauble or whatever it is. And they do that with the kids too, for the kids, don't they? That's just evil. That's just evil. Mommy, I gotta have that! You know, and now you're fighting in the checkout line with the little monster. They're thinking about how they can part your money from you, okay? And lots of study has gone into how can they part you from your money. Every store you walk into has thought this through. Where things are on the aisle, in the aisle, and on the edge of the aisle. I was reading one book about this a while back. It's fascinating reading. The psychological. They've even gotten into brain chemistry. How can we part them from their money? Folks, you have a budget ahead of time. You walk into a store. You have an idea of what you're going to spend there because I need this and this and this and this. You put the blinders on and you dive into the chaos. And if you have a budget, you're going to say no more often. And you're going to come out at the end of the month saying, yes, I was a good steward in how I used my financial resources this month. I can track what it went for. Another step is some of us need to do some plastic surgery. You know what I'm talking about. Cutting up those credit cards. I can't believe, why are women's purses so big? Credit card stacks. I saw one woman pull out of her purse a stack of credit cards with a rubber band around it. Why do we need all these credit cards? Are we trying to impress someone? You don't need a lot of credit cards. One or two, you know, to establish credit. I mean, that whole thing, I get that. My wife has a Kohl's credit card. You know, we shop at Kohl's. But boy, savings. I tell you what, we march into Kohl's with that one credit card and 10 billion coupons. You got your wedding dress for free, didn't you? No? With all the coupons and the half off and that? No, I got that wrong, didn't I? All right, we'll talk later. I thought I had that one right. But we don't go to Kohl's without coupons, let me tell you. 20% off, 30% off, whatever. You don't need a lot of plastic. Don't count your status by how many, but how few plastic cards you need to have. And then, for so many of us, we need to establish a debt repayment plan. You've got debt. And you've got multiple debt. And I heard of people, and I've talked to people, they've maxed out their credit card, so what do they do? What do they do? They get another one to help pay off the one before. Does that work? Not really. Establish a plan that's built into your monthly budget to pay off your debts. And sometimes you have to start real small. $10 a month. But you know, you can do it. The financial people say you should pay off your smallest debts first. You gain a sense of accomplishment by doing that. Take on the small guy. Take him out. And you go, I got one down. And then you take the money that you were paying on that debt and you apply it to the next debt. So now you've increased the amount that you're doing on debt repayment. Instead of saying, oh, let's go party every month with that extra amount. No, no. Take the money you're now saving on that first debt and apply it to the second one. And it'll go down faster. You will have such a sense of accomplishment when you do this. I've seen people do it. They get real excited. It's wonderful. So those are some things, very practical. We need to pray for God's help. We need to have a budget. And that's a hard discipline, folks. I'm not going to, you know. And if you're married, one of the two of you tends to do it better than the other. Okay? The tag team really works here. Which of you does it better? You take on the budget. My wife does the budget, okay? That's why we have no debt, except for the house. Because my wife is running the budget. That's a good thing in my household. Okay? I don't know what it would be for you, but find the one who likes numbers, can say no. You may not like it all the time, but hey, you stay out of debt. And now I want to look at the flip side for this, the last few minutes. And get out of debt. And take that money and invest it in God's purposes. This is the positive side to mammon management. You've heard the expression, you can't take it with you. The Romans had an expression, there are no pockets in a burial shroud. Can't take it with you. When you die, it goes to somebody else. The parable of the rich fool, you know, built all the extra barns, sitting back on the front porch with his mint julep, saying, oh, I'm in for good times now. And God says, you fool. Tonight, your life is required of you. And who will get all that money you have worked so hard to make? Well, you can't take it with you, but the other expression is, you can send it on ahead. And here's the verse that has to do with that. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 20. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. Every time we invest our finances in kingdom enterprises, we are investing in heavenly treasure. We're putting money aside, investing it in God's work, and it has eternal rewards. Now, you know, for some people, they think investing at all is pretty crazy. I mean, here's what you're to work for in your budget. You're paying down debt, but we talk about saving 10%, tithing 10%, you know, saving toward emergency funds, and then long-range retirement. Tithing is 10% that you're giving to God's work. I'd say give more. You know, I'm fascinated as I watch sports on TV, what kind of commercials come on. When you watch a football game, what kind of commercials you get? Beer commercials. People having fun. They're always beautiful. They're young. They're slim. They're having a great time. The beer commercial is selling you, not beer, but how to be popular, how to have a good time. That's what they're really selling. When you watch golf, because you need to sleep, you know, you need something to put you to sleep and you watch golf. What kind of commercials are on? Investment commercials. Investment commercials. Because they figure, if you're watching golf, you must have money. Otherwise, why are you spending your time watching golf? And I just think it's interesting how, you know, they keep talking about, oh, financial security, you need to have enough set aside, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, okay, yes. But is anybody thinking about future securities way out there? Is anybody thinking about when this life is all said and done and all this material stuff goes away? What do you have left? Well, if you make heavenly investments, you're going to have a lot left. You're sending the money ahead. You're investing in the most stable securities ever. Ever. The work of the kingdom. So I would submit that in our budgets and in our thinking about the use of finances, it's not just, well, I give 10% to the church, to God's work in the church, let's put it that way, to influencing people for Jesus Christ and ministering to human need. Let's think of it that way. It's not the church that we're giving to. It's God's work on this planet to liberate people from spiritual bondage, to show them the light of the grace, gospel of Jesus Christ. That's what we give to. I would want to give as much as I could to that purpose. So it's not, oh, I give my 10%, I can do whatever I want with the rest of my money. I've heard that said too. I give my 10, you know, I do my duty to God, and so now I can do whatever I want. Well, I would suggest, how much money do you have to live on? Not can you live on, but narrow it down as much as you can and give everything else to God. Because you're going to send it ahead. You're going to touch people's lives for eternity. And that's what you're going to get in heaven, is people coming to you and hugging you and saying, thank God you gave. Because your money went to this person, this gospel enterprise, and it saved me from hell. That's what I want to hear when I get up there. And when you think about it that way, doesn't it change things a little bit? Doesn't it change your perspective somewhat on what we're about here? I hope so. Susan and I, when we got married, because we're both followers of Christ, we gave 10%. And then we determined every time I got a raise, we would up it by 0.5%. And we've been doing that. Every time we get a raise, it goes up. It's gone up. We give a lot more than 10 now. And I'm not saying that to boast. I'm saying that is should be, I think, the response of every committed disciple of Jesus Christ. Give all you can to God's work. Not only is it a great investment for you, it will help change the world. So, that's the positive side. Now, talk about going for the gold. You know, again, in just a few weeks, we're going to have hundreds of athletes from all over the world who have spent at least 4 years of their lives committed to one goal. What is it? To get a gold medal. That's what it looks like. This is the gold medal specifically designed for the London Olympic Games. That's what they're going for. Go for the gold. They have committed their time, their talent, their treasure to getting one of those. Now, I applaud them. The amount of discipline, the amount of selflessness on their part is incredible to me. And what they're able to do, you know, in swimming or diving or gymnastics, it just astounds me. But I hate to tell you, folks, when they die, they don't take that with them, do they? Now, you all hopefully got one of these. If you didn't, we'll have some in the back. If you didn't get one, I think there's the basket still has some in it. I want this to be a symbol for us. First of all, on one side it says winner. Well, in God's eyes, you are. His son gave up his life for you. You're a winner. The other side, it has number one. The number one part of this says, you know, when you run a race, just don't run. Run to get the prize. So the three questions we finish this series out with is, what's it going to be like for you, the three events that we've talked about, to get the God's prize, God's gold medal? How much of your time will you invest in God's kingdom work? How much are you going to be aware as you walk through your day of God is at work out there? And am I jumping into those Kairos opportunities to serve Him? And how much of your shape are you going to invest in God's kingdom work? Spiritual gifts, your heart, your abilities, your personality, and your experiences. How much of yourself are you going to invest in God's work? Where are you going to serve Him? In His church and out in the world. And then today, how much of your finances are you going to invest in God's kingdom work? Give as much as you can. He is worth it. Go for the gold in your life. Have a purpose that outshines you and me and all of us. Be involved in something much greater than yourself. Something that can bless others, change the world, and honor God. Gracious Father, you are worth our best efforts. May we give you our best. We're not playing games here. The stakes are high. We're talking about souls of people and eternal destinations. We're talking about influencing people for eternity. May we give our best to you and find in that a life of significance and meaning, purpose, and great joy. Amen.